Okay. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this second quarter telephone conference. Present on this conference, we have the CEO, Sven Ombudstvedt. We have the CFO, Audun Rønneid. We have the Head of Communication, Karsten Dybwig. The Treasurer, Odd-Geir Lyngstad, and myself, Frode Tegner, in Investor Relations. I will hand the word over to the CEO for a short introductory remark, and then we will open up for questions via the moderator. Sven?
Thank you, Frode, and good afternoon, everyone. Just a few brief remarks from myself to start this off before we go to the Q&A. And you have most certainly now seen the report and the figures for the second quarter. The EBITDA is at 248 million NOK, 50 million lower than the first quarter, and 50 million also lower than the roughly than the second quarter of last year. Clearly, a disappointing result with revenues hit by the fire at the SC mill in Halden, Norway, and input costs still at the relatively high level we have in the first half, a cost inflation on the direct cost between 5%-6% compared to the full year 2010. The refinancing was done in the second quarter, which is one of the key points and the main activity in the company in that period, done via RCF of 140 million euros and a bond issue of 150 million euros. We have also repaid the old RCF due in the first quarter of 2012 in this quarter, meaning that we have now a U.S. bond of just under $300 million left this year, and another smaller bond of about 700 million NOK left for the first quarter next year. This against cash and credit lines, more than sufficient to handle those, and also to for the operations of the company. So the maturity profile is now facing the larger maturities in  2017 and some smaller maturities from 2014 onwards, which means that we have extended the average lifetime here of our outstandings. At the same time, we have in the quarter reduced the net interest-bearing debt by about 600 million NOK. So we're the balance sheet gearing, which we have followed for some time, is down from 0.9 to 0.85 in the quarter, which has been mainly possible due to the sale of energy and forest land in Brazil. Just a quick remark that the facility in Halden is now back up again running, so we should have for the magazine segment higher volumes in the second half. We also have price increases across segments, more on newsprint and or including newsprint overseas, and somewhat less on magazine, but there should be price increases across all segments. And secondly, a flattening out of most of the raw materials, and even some of them seeing a declining trend for the second half. Some of it will only take effect because of lags in contracts in the fourth quarter and not in the third quarter. So we have cautiously guided on a somewhat better GOE for the full year than what is the average of the first two quarters, but we still face quite high input costs. But overall, volumes should be up in the second half, pricing should be up, and costs should remain relatively flat. That is the best outlook that we can give at this stage. So with those few words, I will hand over to the Q&A sessions, and we will answer them. And as Frode said, we have several people around the table, so we are now prepared to answer the questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star key followed by the digit one on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. And our first question comes from Jussi Uskola of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I have a few quick ones, if I may. First of all, I was just wondering if you could please quantify the price outlook a bit more, especially for the European newsprint market. I mean, what kind of price increases you have been able to secure already. The second question relates to Saugbrugs. Now as it's online, what kind of volume ramp-up should we now assume? I mean, do you believe that it's really able to run with almost full production capacity now in Q3? And thirdly, what kind of maintenance shutdown should we assume for the upcoming two quarters? Thanks.
Okay. The price outlook, European newsprint, we talk about price increases in the range of 3%-5%. This is lower than our ambition when we went into the negotiations, but it's still a meaningful price increase. So we expect that we now reach the more levels which we have seen longer-term reference pricing of 530-550, so we're almost or we are around those levels for the second half, third quarter, and second half. In terms of Saugbrugs, we have successfully started the mill from late June onwards. The story there was that one paper machine was producing throughout, contributing about 10,000 tons per month. We should, with the two larger paper machines up, be able to be at, let's say, another 30,000-35,000 tons on average for the full second half of the year. So all in all, Saugbrugs should be able to do in excess of 45,000 on average for the 6 months. Maintenance shuts, there are no major maintenance shuts for the remainder period that we have scheduled and which are coming up, which will be significant enough to mention in this respect.
Okay, thanks.
Our next question comes from Markus Almerud of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, Markus Almerud here, Morgan Stanley. Two questions, if I may. The first one on pricing. So you said that the 3% to 5%, which is a bit more than your peers have been talking about, but still, it was lower than you expected, and still, operating rates in the industry is fairly okay. So what was the reason behind this, it coming in lower than you had expected? Can you elaborate a little bit on that? That's my first question.
Yeah. It is true. We have the ambitions of sort of more closer to 10% or €50 per ton up. It's also true that we have slightly higher guiding than the peers. This could also be because there are different lengths of the contracts, some quarterly contracts, some half-year and some annual contracts still probably. So you will have a slightly different result depending on the starting point there. The reason why we are unable to do more despite the high delivery to capacity ratios is, I think, a twofold. One is the fact that there is a significant resistance, obviously, on the buyers once you get into territory, which is much sort of where we talk in excess of the longer-term averages. This is what probably where their budgets are. And secondly, of course, there is still less exports this year than we had last year, and all producers have been withdrawing tons from exports back into Europe. So there is no increased, quite the contrary, there is no increased export pressure from other regions into Europe, but it's basically the Europeans withdrawing because of relatively weak netbacks on the exports, and this year, as opposed to last year, much higher. Prices in Europe, so I think it's the that is the main effect why it has not been possible to do much more. And Also, in fairness, I think some contracts for the full year means that there will be too large discrepancy between the various suppliers. So I think there has been these levels is where we have been able to settle. So I guess the main explanation in short is that there has been quite a lot of tonnage available by Europeans taking exports back to Europe and delivering from their stocks. If you look at the delivery to ratio, delivery to capacity ratio for June, we are above 100%, so it's clear that we as an industry are also building down a little bit producer inventories.
Okay. And my second question is regarding the M&A situation, and if you could just talk a little bit about if and how your view has changed on the industry after you weren't able you had to half your bond and what's going on in the markets in general, and if you could just elaborate a little bit about your thinking about what you think, because I know that, for instance, UPM said yesterday that there's an absolute need for this to happen. It's the only way forward. So if you could just update us on your latest thinking on those views after the most recent events, please.
I think what has happened sort of between the last quarter and this quarter in this respect is, of course, the European Commission's clearance of the UPM-Milikowski deal, which we view as quite positive, as it has been a thorough review, and the Commission has concluded that this is indeed a highly competitive international global market, where there is certainly room to consolidate, as there was no remedies attached to the ruling. And I think this is clearly a view that we share. With also that deal being in the magazine space, it's clear for us that it's a newsprint game that we need to be engaged in. And I would certainly also say that I believe that it's further consolidation is needed. We still have a too fragmented supplying basis. One aspect is the selling price, but also on the raw materials. Sometimes everyone goes after the last ton of recovered paper, and they drive up the prices, and no one seems to stop. So there is clearly still a need for this, and I think the first half of this year reinforces the need for consolidation to happen.
And do you think that your own situation and where you are positioned, so to speak, has changed in any way? Because of your balance sheet and because of the bad bond markets, and that you had to halve the size of your bond issue because the markets were not good enough. The high yield bond market was weak at the time. Does this change your view in where you are positioned in this? I mean, in the next step in the consolidation.
I think what is certain is the case is that the weak, not only the bond markets, but the weak markets in all aspects make any type of activity more difficult. This is clear. So timing-wise, it's not easy to foresee a very short-term hectic activity on M&A anywhere, I think. So that is clearly the case when it comes to our own balance sheet and financing. It's clear that we have done these divestments in Brazil and done even more non-core assets and deleveraging than we thought from let's say non-operational elements. It's also rather clear that we will generate more cash in the second half, and we have a maturity profile which is reasonable. So I think basically it's never good to have to be in the bond market at difficult times, and in retrospect you could clearly say that we were a bit late in the bond market. At the same time, I think our main strategic statement today, we need to be active and try to find solutions in the consolidation game, and we are open for all type of situations, including our own structure, if that is necessary. So I think those statements we have said several times before, and it still remains.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Patrick Kersting of Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the discussion on the M&A. Just a question, maybe if you could go into a bit more detail explaining what exactly happened to the magazine business in the second quarter. I mean, I know about the fire, but it looks like A, you're talking about the mix effect as to having to export a bit more. I would assume with less production, you would have been able to shift all of that into the European market. And then, can you explain how your insurance works, given that from my numbers, you've fallen from a run rate of, I think, underlying about 100 million in the fourth quarter to 60 in the first, and now 15 in the second quarter. Just talk to me a bit about how that is going and what we should expect for the second half in that business.
Absolutely. I will take the first part of it, and then I will leave the insurance to Audun Rønneid, our CFO. The magazine business in the second quarter, as you correctly point out, have been hit by more exports of LWC out of Europe, and it is true that it's a bit disappointing that the fire and the loss of volumes did not do more for the market balance in uncoated. But this is our only uncoated mill, so the rest are coated, LWC, which is not, while there is some substitution, it's not easy to substitute everything. So we have more exports out of Germany, and which is in line with the whole industry, that both LWC and SC has demand in Europe has been a bit weaker, and we have all compensated by exporting more. So that is the issue, and that is part of the earnings. The other. Factor is clearly that there are indirect effects also of the fire, which we can come to now with the insurance. So maybe Evan, you can go through a little bit how that works.
Yeah. On the insurance, if we are talking about the business interruption, what I said in the presentation this morning was that we have no change in EBITDA between the first quarter and the second quarter for Saugbrugs mill due to the fire. So it's no change in EBITDA for magazine due to the fire between the first and the second quarter. Then when that is said, is that we have estimated loss due to the business interruption. So we have estimated an insurance compensation for this loss to cover these losses. But this now only up to the end of the second quarter, and of course we will have effect of the fire also in the coming quarter and also probably into the fourth quarter, because you have indirect effects. We have started up the production in mid-end of June, full production, but of course it takes time to get in up to full speed. It gets time to get fully into the market again. So the direct effect and the insurance effect of this we will see hopefully late this year, but it's far too early to say what will be the result of the insurance compared to the cost we have had.
I can also just add, to try to answer your final part, what the run rate coming from 100 down to 60 now at 15 in this quarter. I certainly think that we need to get it back towards the run rate that we were at during this year, and this is clearly that we will have more volumes obviously when the mills are running, and there's also a flattening and slight weakening of the pulp prices and to a certain extent energy prices. So we expect an improvement clearly in this coming from almost nothing, and the volumes and slight improvement on raw materials. The pricing on magazine is relatively flat over the summer.
Okay. Thanks for that. Maybe just to clarify, basically, on the comments on the insurance. So the 15 million already includes the lost business for the first half up until June, right? So, are you implying that your EBITDA would have been around the same level had you had the full Saugbrugs operations running throughout the first half?
To answer that, like I said, we have been a bit on the conservative side looking at the insurance compensation, but you know, the time it will take now until we are on full speed, both operation-wise in the market, and the impact and what you are you get from the insurer here, it's so difficult to estimate. But of course, the fire has had a negative impact, both due to that we have the self-retention that we have expensed in the first quarter of 30 million, and a fire would always, you know, a business interruption like that would always have a negative impact on the EBITDA. You are not able to get recover for all indirect consequences from the insurance. That's the normal, what I'm used to.
And I guess what we're saying here is that the indirect effects we could take, it's relatively easy to estimate the repair cost and the direct effects. The indirect effects will still take some time. The insurance settlement for the earthquake in Chile, which happened in February last year, has taken about 18 months at least to fully comprehend. So. And to settle, so we cannot say that this is over, and we certainly believe that we would have a higher result if the mill had been running. Just the fixed cost spread out is significant when you sell 7% tons less.
Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from Oscar Lindstrom of Erik Penser Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, I have a couple of questions. Just to continue on the Saugbrugs fire and the effects on the magazine earnings. So, as I understand it, compared to the second quarter, the loss or the EBITDA effect of the fire should be less in the third and the fourth quarter. Can you in any way sort of quantify that sort of positive effect, or
no? I don't think we can be that. It's clearly a positive effect, and I think the magazine segment, all in all, as we just described, we come from a run rate of about 100 million down to 60, down to 15, and I think we will aim to try to get back to the run rate that we had throughout the second half. And what is helping clearly is that we have now the full volumes through and slight easing of the input factors compared to the first two quarters of this year. So I think that's what we can do. But it is clear that at these levels, which are quite low, even impacts of which in normal circumstances would be relatively modest, I think we will have a big impact. And if you just do a very quick calculation on our total fixed cost, and you say that we sell 7% less, this is roughly 75 million, which is just the effect of the tons from a fixed cost spread out. So that means that it's a significant event. But being absolutely clear on it, as Evden said, there is a lot of secondary effects, and it also means that we have a negotiation with an insurance company to deal with. So I don't think that we can be extremely specific on the numbers.
All right. Follow-up question on the newsprint pricing. I mean, you talked about the levels, or you quantified the levels for your European business, but you also mentioned that you would have price increases in Australia, if I understood you correctly. What kind of price increases are we talking about there?
We talk about for the domestic Australian business, we talk about in the range of 3%, but of course this is the Australian domestic part of the overseas business. So for Latin America and Asia, there is not a contracted increase, and which means that the this effect is not coming through on all the overseas tons, but the contractual rate is 3% from the 1st of July.
All right. And your contracts in Europe, they are 6 months?
They are 3 months contracts mainly, and some are a bit longer, but it's the main principle is still quarterly.
All right. And you mentioned that you expect sales of both newsprint and magazine paper to sort of improve in the third quarter compared to the second quarter, and that magazine is a typical sort of seasonal point. To what extent do you see this improvement in deliveries or already, and to what extent is it a sort of prognosis?
What we see is that the newsprint volumes are running reasonably well. So I think the newsprint and the improved news business is the most solid for the time being. I think it's fair to say that both the uncoated and the coated magazine side is not as buoyant as you should expect at this period of the year. So for those segments, it's more sort of a normal seasonality type of comment. Having said that, I think the booking situation is, in terms of how many days your production is booked, this has passed its lowest point probably for this year.
Okay, so you're not sort of seeing the bottom fall out of the demand for your products in any way, or seeing a sort of a sharp drop compared to what you would seasonally expect?
We have not seen anything like that, and the indications for the second half is pretty much in line with what we have expected. So there is no one sort of saying that they have big drops in demand. There is an uncertainty around News International in the UK, which everyone who reads or follows the papers will know. And some of the papers is now difficult to read on a regular basis. But I have to say that this is also the demand in the UK is probably from our side as much hampered by a relatively weak UK economy in May and June as well. So the only place where there's volume uncertainty basically is in the UK between customers. How will this pan out? And that's so the, let's call it the volume indications we get per customer there is probably more uncertain than they would otherwise be.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. Two more questions, a little bit more long term. I mean, you touched briefly on the topic of sort of further asset sales. I mean, is there anything additional that you can divest that are sort of non-operational assets?
The non-operational part is what we have guided on, which is less now than it has been over the last 18 months, but it's still another 200 to 300 million NOK left, which is in progress, but which takes time as these are more real estate type of assets. We still expect that we can do that for the remainder of this year, so the next few months. After that, then you are into the discussion about the mills themselves.
Okay, and finally about your CapEx forecast for 2011, and can you now see that there's going to be sort of any effect on that from the Saugbrugs fire, and on a sort of longer term, how sustainable is the sort of current CapEx level, more sort of longer term? I mean, you had these startup problems in the magazine side as well after the stop. I mean, is that an indication that you're spending too little on maintenance, or?
I'll come back to the last part, but I will give Evden the opportunity to answer the first part about the CapEx guiding and the Saugbrugs effect.
Yep. We have earlier guided that we will be around 500 million in CapEx this year. We have an effect of the fire at Saugbrugs, and we have invested roughly 50 million now to rebuild what was damaged in the fire. But still, we will be around or maybe somewhat below 500 for the whole year. That's also the level we expect to be on next year.
This is the guiding when it comes to is this too low? So our answer is still no. We still expect that since this is two-thirds maintenance, one-third energy efficiency and other smaller projects, we still see this as a sustainable level. The startup problems now related, it's true that we had startup problems. So it was mainly newsprint startup after the red holiday season in the second quarter with the Easter and a few other holidays. And this is purely operational things that really shouldn't happen, but which sometimes happens in a large-scale process industry. So that is more on the operations, not really equipment and lack of maintenance.
Okay, thank you very much. Those were my questions.
question comes from Carl Bergquist of Arrowgrass Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a couple of questions here, all relating to the liquidity and the bank facility. Can you first just please confirm that the 12 months rolling, adjusted EBITDA is measured on a 12 months rolling basis? That's my first question. Secondly, given that it is adjusted EBITDA, can you please let us know, according to your calculations, what that number was for the end of June? And the third question is, how comfortable are you with the headroom under your banking facility? Because clearly the ratio is tightening quite significantly over the coming quarters. And the fourth question really is relating to the asset disposals that you were talking about, the real estate assets in Norway. How confident are you that you'll be able to realize 200 to 300 million of sales in this financial year so that the cash will come in before the covenant test is tested on the 31st of December? Thank you.
Okay, I will give the word in a minute to Odd-Geir Lyngstad, our head of treasury. But just on the last one, this is you're correct in saying that this is mainly Norwegian property which is left. We are in sales processes here, and most of them are relatively advanced. So it's a lot of paperwork. Having said that, of course, you can never 100% guarantee this, since it's a lot of processes going on. But we are quite confident in that range. 200 to 300 million, that we are able to do it this calendar year. For the other two questions on the debt metrics, I will hand over to Odd-Geir, who is prepared for those.
On the covenant testing, you could kind of say yes, it's 12 months rolling, but in practice, the covenant testing is done on a quarterly basis, so it's really four quarters running, but I mean the result is really the same. In the quarterly report, we have actually stated the calculation for the covenant testing on the 30th of June. So the adjusted EBITDA for the last 12 months is 1,397, and net interest expenses is all 742 for the last 12 months or four quarters rolling. And the levels are also calculated in there. When it comes to covenant levels going forward, the covenant in the bank facility is based on our business plan, and there is a need for certain improvement in the EBITDA going forward. We see the covenant level as tight, but we believe that we will be able to comply with the covenants in that facility. But of course, we also see that the level is tight.
Just a follow-up question then on that. Have you drawn down any of this facility so far? And if not, when in time do you expect having to draw down on it?
We have not drawn anything on the credit facility now. We expect to generate positive cash flow in the second half. So I don't really see a need to draw on that in the short term. We have sufficient cash to cover the installments or the debt that matures this year. Then we have some bond debt falling due in the first quarter next year. And around that time would probably be the first time when there could be a need to look at that. But we believe that we have ample financing for the time being and no need to draw on the short term.
That's very helpful. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Linus Larsson of SEB and Skilda. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. I'd like to come back to what you say in the press release today, that you evaluate all options for further internal efficiencies. Does that imply that you are again increasingly looking at potentially making permanent capacity shutdowns?
It means that neither temporary nor permanent shutdowns can be excluded, yes.
Okay. And it is more likely than in the past, and
I guess
my question is what limitations do you see, what is is there anything financially preventing you from making permanent capacity closures?
No, there is nothing preventing that. I guess you may be referring to some of the old covenants in the old RCF, which we no longer have and are bound by. But I guess the real answer is that clearly we evaluate on a running basis both temporary and permanent closures. If they would help our financial performance, we would have done them and will, of course, do them. It's also clear that there is a new signal which we picked up this morning, which is that we have now half a year behind us where basically the Norwegian units do not generate any meaningful EBITDA. Of course, a bit special situation with the fire, but nonetheless we have a situation which is quite serious, where the Norwegian strength of the Norwegian currency is not helping, and the currency is only getting stronger as far as we can see. So it's clear that we are getting more urgency probably into these evaluations now. But having said all that, there is no immediate plans for it, and there is at the same time as there is no restrictions on it. So it's a financial calculation, basically.
Great. And then also, just coming back to the price discussions that we had previously, if you could just clarify, in magazine paper, are you seeing price increases in the third quarter? You commented very much upon newsprint, but what are you seeing in magazine?
Yeah. No, the comment on magazine was indeed short, as you noticed, and we see also price increases there, but less than we see for newsprint.
Mm.
So there is not
a couple of percent.
It's not a big increase. So we talked about 3-5% newsprint. It's less than that, clearly less than that on the magazine side. But we have seen price increases from the second to the third quarter.
Okay. And maybe on that topic, in terms of realized average newsprint pricing in the third compared to the second quarter, if we take all different kinds of diluting mix effects, you know, export shares and various subgrades, etc. Do you have a rough idea of what the realized price increase should be in your case in that European newsprint division?
The caveat is always the currency here. So you could say from the first quarter to the second quarter, we saw European newsprint prices up by 4% in local currency and translating into NOK about 2%. So that's when we talk about 3-5% now, that is in local currency. So when you see realized then in NOK, you have to make an assumption on the currency.
Okay, that's excellent. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Nitin Diaz of JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My first question was on the insurance proceeds. The straightforward question is, if you get those cash proceeds, would you get it as one lump sum in Q3 or Q4, or would you get it in part payments through a course of long time, which could be, I guess, as long as 18 months, which is like in the Chilean case?
Hmm. Yeah, this is Aldo Rona. We got a part payment now by end of June, amounting to 150 million as a partial payment for the insurance. So we will then get, call it a lump sum payment also later, and until we have the final settlement.
Understood. And was this 115 included in the numbers reported?
The 150 million is the cash effect. We got 150 million in cash. But then this is partly to cover the property damage and partly to cover the business interruption. So, you know, you cannot say that this part is for the business interruption and this part is for the property damage. So this is a lump sum payment from the insurer.
Fair point. I guess my question was, did you get it before the 30th of June and therefore it is included in the cash flow numbers?
Yes, we got it by the end of June. But of course we have a lot of cost also because we had no production, nearly no production at the mill. So this, we have a lot of fixed costs that this should cover, of course, during that period.
And the remaining that you get, would you recognize an income in your income statement at the same time, or would it only be a cash impact?
The payment would only be a cash effect and not any effect on the EBITDA. The effect on EBITDA from the business interruption would come due to that we are estimating an insurance compensation for the business interruption. So we are estimating every month then a compensation from the insurance company against the cost we have incurred during that month.
And that's helpful. In terms of the bank covenant, you said that right now you're fairly comfortable. Do you envisage yourselves having a conversation with the banks anytime soon to be proactive about it just because of the uncertain macro environment, or do you take the view right now that you're comfortable, and if that's the case, you'll take a decision closer to that time frame rather than earlier?
Yeah, I can. You know, regarding the covenant, as we have said, we are estimating selling some more non-core assets, 200 to 300 million. And also be aware of that we have already paid 70% of our total interest cost for the year by the end of the first half year. We are estimating improvement in EBITDA and cash flow for the remaining half year. So that means, in that respect, that we will reduce our net debt through the second quarter, and that will also improve our covenant ratio. And also, we have, as we have guided on before, we have, with the cash we have sufficient fund to cover the maturity this year, and we also expect through our cash flow that we will be able to cover the maturity in the beginning of the next year. The covenant, we don't see any need for any covenant to approach any banks at this stage. But of course, as the covenant is tightening, we have to monitor this closely, of course.
I guess it's another comment also to that, and with the new facility, there are four banks in it, and we have obviously a very good and tight communication, which we also had in the past with these banks. So I think this also needs to be said, that this is a facility which is, in that sense, relatively easy to manage.
Okay. And sorry, just to clarify, did you say that the maturities in Q1 of 2012, you should be able to cover it with cash flow, or did you envisage drawing down on the facility at that point, even temporarily, because you have working capital out for pretty much in the same time, in the first quarter of the year?
Yeah. We have this credit facility to, you know, for the purpose when we are increasing the working capital, for instance, when we are not producing for stock. We need that sometime during the year due to the seasonality. That is the purpose also for this credit facility. But at the time being, we have sufficient cash, and through the cash flow, we expect to cover. But, of course, this depends on the market development and the cash flow development on the operation and sale of assets. So there's so many, many variables here that we have to consider all of them.
Understood. That's helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Eriko Miyazaki-Ross of Barclays Capital. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my questions. If I understand correctly, in order to keep the new RCF that you guys have got in place, you needed to raise net proceeds of around 2 billion NOK by September end. How close to this 2 billion mark are you currently? And are you expecting to hit that target through the asset disposals that you've mentioned previously?
That's already done. So that's no issue anymore. We have already done that.
Okay, that's perfect. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Ken Poole of Independent Global Research. Please go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. Just a quick question. You had said earlier that you expected to generate more cash in the second half, and I was wondering if maybe you could provide a little more guidance and also maybe where you expected some of this to come from, possibly over the next 6 to 12 months.
Yeah, I can comment on that. You know, normally the magazine business volume will increase, and we will then also increase margins during the second half. And, you know, before Christmas season, we normally would have the lower stock level, for instance, by late of the year. So that will improve the cash flow, as one example. We are also, as we have said, estimated that with the price increase we see both in Europe and in Australia, that will also generate a better cash flow. And then through sale of non-core assets in addition.
Would you mind maybe quantifying what your expectations were on that?
It's hard to quantify. I don't think I should quantify closer.
I think the currency impact is too big to be able to be too precise on. But it's true that these elements, together with the fact that more than 70% of the year's interest cost has been taken also, you would expect, like last year, that the cash profile is skewed towards the second half of the year. We did eat more than half a billion in working capital increase in the first quarter. We released some of it in this quarter, but there is still quite a release to go before the year end. So somewhat improved margins, less financial outflows, and some non-core assets plus working capital reduction should mean that there is a significant cash flow in the remainder part of the year compared to the first half.
All right, thank you. That's helpful.
Next question comes from Julian Dumas of Putnam. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I've got a few questions. My first question has to do with the magazine business. Could you, if possible, explain me why have your margin fallen from 4% to 1%? And what's the driver behind such a sharp reduction?
Yeah, the main driver here is the higher share of exports with lower prices in European currency and obviously lower netbacks than domestic European sales. The second is that we also still see increases in the variable cost in the segment through the period. So those are the main ones. But again, remember that the volume effect of the fire means that there is margin-wise there are less tons to distribute the fixed cost on. So that also distorts the picture a little bit.
Okay. So to continue on the question, so you've guided toward an additional 45,000 tons of magazine coming in the whole second half of the year. Where do you see those volumes going to? Is it going to be exported as well? And what kind of margins do you think you're going to achieve on those volumes?
Yeah, so what we say is that let's call it 40,000 to 45,000 additional per month is coming out of Norway. This is uncoated magazine, which goes into a somewhat a different segment than the rest of the mills are doing. And we are already back with most of our customers here. The customers are in there's customers in the UK, in Germany, in continental Europe, Scandinavia, and in the US. So we still expect to be back with more or less the same geographical mix as we had before the fire. The margins will obviously depend on traditional factors like where the input factors go and where the currency go. The only thing we know roughly now is where the price levels are in the market.
The 40-45 per ton, extra ton is per month. It's correct, per month, not for the.
It's not 40-45 extra per month. So the mill, when it produces totally, it's in that range. So we had 10,000 per month during the fire. So it's probably the additional tonnage is about 35,000 tons.
Okay, so an additional 5,000 tons per month.
35.
Okay, fine. Very briefly, on your working capital, you guided during the bond issue toward a full year outflow of 300 million. Where do you stand today? Do you still think you're going to have a full year outflow of 300 million Norwegian krona for your working capital for the full year?
I think what we saw was a large outflow in the first quarter, which was then somewhat, although moderately, reduced in the second quarter. And we still expect that we have, again, a reduction in the second half, more from a seasonal point of view. But, of course, the value per ton is higher this year than it was last year. So I still think that guiding is quite it's accurate.
Okay. And very briefly, in terms of you had at one stage some plan to go and do a receivable securitization program. Where have you given any thoughts to it?
I will ask Mr. Lyngstad, our head of treasury, to answer the securitization question.
We are kind of considering several financing options where securitization is one of them. But it's difficult to go in kind of further detail on that right now. It's kind of an option that we are exploring. We are in kind of discussions with the counterparty on that. But we haven't kind of entered into some kind of execution on that yet, so we haven't come that far. But
okay.
It's still something that we are looking at and evaluating.
And one clarification question. You mentioned, stop me if I've got it wrong, that you got 150 million Norwegian kroner as part payment for the disruption at Søberg's in Q2. Is it correct? Is it the way I should understand it?
Yeah, we got the cash payment of 150 million. That's right. Yeah,
but your cash from operation was minus 129. So without this payment, were you basically 300 million negative for Q2?
Yeah, but remember one thing. You know, we have a lot of fixed cost that we pay out during the fire. So you know the compensation and is covering fixed cost, is covering repair cost, is covering cash, you know, to start rebuilding what has been damaged. So we have a lot of cash outflow due to this business interruption, fixed cost repair and so forth. So this is a payment to cover the cash outflow we have had.
The accountant in me, if I should answer that question, you are partly right, but only partly, because it also covers some capitalized items.
Yeah.
Okay. But can you just also help me understand one thing? If I look at the provisions you've taken, what, 50 million of provision for loss of EBITDA and 45 million for the damages on your premises, that gives you 55 million NOK. Yet you received 150 million of cash from the insurances. It seems to me you received far more than what you've provisioned.
I'm probably
missing something on that. Can you please reconcile the two for me?
You missed the running fixed cost, so you could say that the capitalized element is about 50 million, as we said.
Hmm.
So then you could say one third of the 150 goes towards the capitalized. The other 100 million goes towards the cost of not having any business, basically, which is to pay the people who are there and cleans up after the fire, all the contractors on site, etc.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Stephen Leenert of UBS. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi. I had three questions, and sorry to go back to the insurance, but I was a bit confused. I understand the 13 million gross operating earnings is your estimate, and also the 45 million is a plant and equipment. But did you also receive 150 million, not cash payment, to cover the expenses you incurred? Has that already been processed?
To try to clarify this, we have roughly 50 million has been capitalized as CapEx. So you could say that 150 of it is covering what we have of additional CapEx, to make it as simple as possible. The other outflows is, of course, that you have to pay the people on the mill the fixed cost, and you get the compensation for an estimated loss of earnings in the period. The 13 million is our own deductible, which we have to cover ourselves, all the losses that we incur from not operating, loss of income and coverage of fixed cost, is covered then by the remainder of the lump sum and additional lump sums to be paid in the future. So the figure is clearly higher than 150 million, the total insurance settlement.
So very simply, do you expect a check, and I understand this is your preliminary estimates, you expect a check for 13 and 45 million respectively in the second half 11?
No, these figures have nothing to do with each other. So the total loss is several hundred million by not running the mill, right? Partly because equipment being burnt and have to be replaced. And you have a cost of the fact that you cannot sell your volumes, you have no income in the period, while at the same time you still have to pay your people to clean up and even contractors on site. So that will run, and that we don't know yet what the final figure is, but it's clearly in excess of the 150 million that we have received. Then the 150 million that has been received is a part cash payment, which is could be 1% or 99%, depending on what the final is, but it certainly is somewhere in between there. The other figures that we operate with is the 13 million, which is the self-insurance part, which is what we have to cover ourselves, which is a pure loss which was taken in the first quarter. So those are all, let's say, the relevant figure. In addition, we have guided that we have capitalized about 50 million. This is simply because the CapEx figure in the second quarter is a little bit higher than what you probably would have expected from our normal CapEx guidance.
Okay, understood. Thank you. My second question, the whole industry is watching UPM and Milikoski and expecting capacity reductions, and those apparently are imminent. At least that's what the industry is talking about. Are you planning or thinking about capacity reductions in association with that, or are you waiting and seeing what UPM does first?
Well, certainly we are not doing anything in association with anyone, that's for sure. But what we can say is that we have, in the first half year, we have relatively weak earnings in some of the mills, particularly the ones exposed to the strong Norwegian currency. So the evaluation is clearly ongoing, and we will need to take measures if earnings are not improving. We have to do that. Obviously, a temporary shutdown, we always measure to see what we think is cash optimal to do. But also permanent closures can never be ruled out when earnings are at the levels they are today. But nothing in conjunction or in association with anyone, obviously.
Understood. And my final question is, with the earnings going the way they are, and clearly a lot of improvements to be done, and let's see if it happens, but when do you look back at the business and then consider the Australian assets for sale once again? I know it's been talked about, the seriousness of it, I'm not sure, but when do you take a step back and reconsider that?
I think we are flexible and have a very flexible mind and have always that in the back of our minds. So if there is a reason to dispose of it in terms of having a solution for the European, to say, problem, there is absolutely nothing against it. What we have said, and we can still repeat, is that selling it before we see an improvement in Europe, either through consolidation or capacity curtailments or what have you, would probably be harmful and probably even possibly lethal to the company, so that we cannot do. The fact that we have prepared it as a standalone business last year and even into this year, and that we have an open mind, that is also equally true. So we do not have any. It's no religion here, so we will in principle do what is right.
Okay, thanks very much.
Our next question comes from Rebecca Clements of Knight Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey guys, good afternoon. Most of my questions have been answered, but a couple of follow-ups here. Regarding the accounts receivable securitization, you also mentioned that in tandem with pursuing other funding options. I was just curious what those other options were.
It's kind of different debt financing options. They could be kind of bank, certain types of bank financing, but not kind of a large syndicated facility, but more kind of bilateral arrangements and other kind of debt facilities. But that's as much as I can say now.
Oh, okay. And I was going to say, those bilateral facilities, would those be with your existing banks, or would you be pursuing those perhaps with other banks?
That would not be with a kind of syndicated banks. I think that we have kind of a facility with four banks. So it's not additional facilities with any of those four banks. So it would be kind of other.
Okay. And would those be securitized or using security?
No security.
No security.
No, we have a quite tight negative pledge language, so it's very limited what we could kind of offer as security. So we are not talking about that. If you kind of talk about some kind of security, if you like, then we're more into the securitization part, which is not kind of security as such, but at least you give someone a preference to lend against an asset.
Okay, and you had previously said that you could do up to 150 million euros of accounts receivable securitization. Is that still an accurate amount?
Yeah, I think that is kind of we have the same kind of mills and volumes are keeping up quite okay, and prices have increased this year. So I think that number is still a good estimate. Yes.
Okay. And do you have a pro forma? I know you had one in the red, but I didn't see the final. Do you have a pro forma cash interest number for the next year or for 2012 at all, or a general guidance for us?
The pro forma number in the red is probably more or less identical to what we actually have reported, but because we didn't really. It didn't really change much, and it was limited what we could kind of adjust that pro forma number with kind of facilities that are kind of maturing later in the year. But with 150 and quite a large repayment, a reduction of gross debt, we believe that interest expenses and interest costs will then remain quite stable. It could actually go a little bit down if we don't put on more debt facilities, but as you understand, we are kind of exploring certain options, and the best estimate is probably that it will remain fairly stable.
Okay, so you had 742 as reported. I guess that's the net interest expense as opposed to the cash interest expense, but that's what you reported in your report for your coverage calculation. Is that safe to use as a sort of rule of thumb?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, and then lastly, on your bank facility, when you had discussions with the banks and presented your business plan to them, and they put these financial covenants in place, which I thought at the time were a bit aggressive and tight, how long of a plan did you submit to them, and has there been any change in terms of your longer-term outlook for newsprint, et cetera, or what your business plan was when you submitted versus how you view the market today?
Yeah, I think when you kind of do a business plan, we haven't really updated that business plan, and we don't have kind of a new business plan as such going further out in time. But of course, that business plan is based on certain assumptions with regard to currency, pricing, volume, and input costs. And as you kind of understand from discussion so far, inflation, cost inflation has been somewhat higher than what we guided on. We have achieved the price increases, and we have had further price increases this year. And the NOK is stronger than probably what we expected when we made the business plan. So, yes, there are probably some negatives to that. But as we have said, we still believe that we will comply with the covenants, but the headroom is probably less than what was built into the covenant when we established that for the bank facility.
And if, in fact, you did start to feel uncomfortable with that headroom, how far in advance would you feel that you would need to have discussions with them since it's tested quarterly? Is this something that you feel like you have enough insight that you, for example, if you thought you were going to have issues in the middle of 2012, just as a throwing a number out there, would that be something that you would probably start discussing at year end, or would you wait until more like first quarter?
Yeah, I think as Sven mentioned here, these are kind of four banks into this new facility. These are banks that we have a very close dialogue with. We haven't seen any need to kind of start or enter into any kind of discussions with them yet. But these are banks that we have a good relationship to, so I think we will manage that. But we don't have kind of a set target date for when we will enter into discussions now. We need to kind of closely monitor the headroom and see that against our own expectations and development going forward, and then we will, of course, address that in due course.
Okay, and if in fact you did feel it needed to be addressed, given the relationship you have with these banks and the fact that it's a much smaller syndicate than you'd had historically, which probably makes it a little easier maybe in some respects to have those discussions, would it be something, I mean, do you think that they'd come back to you and ask for security? I know you can't speak for them, but it sounded like it was a bit of a tense discussion when you did the original agreement, and obviously, you know, there was some give and take there. I'm just wondering if what you think they might ask for or how onerous it might be if you need to adjust those headroom numbers up.
I think it's very unlikely that they will ask for security, because we have been through discussions with them when we established this facility, and one of the reasons why we did not end up having a secured facility was due to limitations in other bond agreements and so on. So they have an upstream guarantee, and I don't think it's not likely that they will ask for additional security on top of what they already have.
Okay, that's all I have. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Clarissa Tay of Barclays Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, I just have one question for you. So from quarter one to quarter two, we've seen a reduction of working capital of 113 million. So going forward, I just want to find out what are the trends that you would expect in working capital for the second half, please. Thank you.
What we said is that we increased by more than half a billion in the first half. So year to date, we have give and take a good 400 million increase. We have in the past indicated that we see a decrease for the second half, mainly a seasonal decrease in volume. But the value per ton is higher than last year, so we still see an increase. So we have given, or we have nodded in agreement when people have suggested around 300 million as a yearly figure that we would increase our working capital, which means that the second half should give a decrease, a meaningful decrease.
Okay, thank you very much.
Next question comes from James Durance of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Just one very quick question, which is the adjusted EBITDA number that you give for the last 12 months is 1397. Could you just break that up between the last four quarters, please?
It's actually very, very close to the gross reported gross operating earnings. The only thing that we kind of adjust for in that number is activities that are
sale
of assets or activities that are not kind of continued, and there are certain, but there are just minor, very minor adjustments.
Yeah.
So you get very, very close by just taking the reported gross operating earnings.
Okay, understood. Thank you very much.
question comes from Jayant Kandalam of Lure Analysts. Please go ahead.
My question has mostly been answered, so thank you so much.
Next question comes from Martin Beck of Sothic. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I just two very simple questions. One is, what is the minimum cash that you need to run the business? And the second one is, what is your break-even EBITDA, i.e. the EBITDA under which you are still operating cash flow positive? Thank you.
The last question, we have between 700 and 800 million in net interest a year, and then we are guided on capex of roughly 500. And of course we will have some tax, but that will be very minor. So if you say between 700 and 800 on interest and 500 on capex, you will be roughly between 1.2 and 1.3 billion. That's roughly. Then the first question was
minimum cash in the business.
Cash. Yeah, the minimum cash we can run the business with a cash that is somewhat below 1 billion NOK. I think we have said.
Sorry, just
five,
below 1 billion. You said
we have below 1 billion between. Minimum 500 to 700 we should have as a minimum.
It's clear just to answer that. In the first quarter of this year, we had the working capital swing of about 550. So you need to have a facility to handle those, which we have. And then for the restricted cash and others, then it's in that range, 500-600 million.
Okay. Okay, excellent. And then maybe one follow-up. Just looking at the current cap structure and profitability, cash flow, minimum cash, and so on and so forth. Can you just explain to me how you think it would be possible with that capital structure to participate in consolidation in the market? I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something, but I just can't see how you possibly can do that.
Well, I think consolidation can happen in several ways. So you can do it through joint venturing, you can do it through asset swaps, you can even be bought. So it's a lot of different options out there. But it's equally clear that the present market situation with, let's say, financing turbulence, does not bode itself very well for any type of direct acquisition or sales. So that is equally clear, but I think the consolidation is it's still possible through different ways without necessarily a cash transaction. And we have slightly jokingly in the past talked about poor man's M&A, which means that you have other types than pure cash acquisition.
Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from Simon Matthews of Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi. Okay, I think we've covered most things now, but just very quickly on your outlook statement, you make a comment there with respect to input factors that you're expecting the price of energy and recovered paper to be somewhat lower in the second half. Specifically on recovered paper, wondered if you could talk us through briefly what your thought process is there as to why it is that you think recovered paper costs are coming down somewhat. Thank you.
Yes, this is based on the second half where we saw, the second quarter where we saw very high recovered paper prices in continental Europe. In Europe and in the world, but driven by continental European demand this time, not so much China. And we have seen, let's say, some maybe spot tonnages, but still quite extreme buying at almost up to 200 euros per ton in Rotterdam. And this is levels which are clearly unsustainable, where people, even packaging people, where you destroy the demand at these type of levels. I think we've tested the peak on recovered paper, and it's clear that you have quite some marginal tonnage in usage of recovered paper when you reach these levels. So we've seen also that the market has at least moderated a little bit from these levels. So we think that what we saw in the second quarter was probably the peak in terms of recovered paper prices for our own input costs.
Okay. And would it be possible just to give us a rough percentage of how much you think things are down from that peak as we sit here today?
I think what we have seen is that we have had the cool-off of some from the absolute peak of 20-30 euros per ton. Clearly, this is a volatile and very sort of spot-oriented pricing on some of these tons. Of course, in our own procurement, we have some different contracts which go a little bit deeper in the sourcing markets towards municipalities, particularly in France for Golbey. So there's a slightly different contract structure, but I think we will not see a dramatic fall by any means, but we will see some decline. So maybe between around €20.
Okay, that's great. Thanks a lot.
Our next question comes from Nitin Diaz of J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
My question has been answered. Thank you.
Next question comes from Roberto Pozzi of SG. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. What is actually preventing you from further pursuing the option of receivable securitization? You were saying before that you have not entered into any execution, into an execution phase. Why are you not entering this phase, and when do you expect actually to do so? This is my first question, then I have another one.
Well, to kind of answer that, we have had this, it's right, we have had this kind of and looked into this option for some time, but the process was very much put on hold when we had to focus on the bank and bond part. And then July is very much holiday season here, but it is kind of to finalize and see if we can reach an agreement on main terms and conditions, basically, as simple as that. And before you have an agreement on that, you do not have an execution phase.
And the likelihood that you are going to set up such a facility is high, medium, low?
I don't think I will try to give an estimate because it's kind of either/or. Either you have it or you haven't, or you don't.
And about the amount, sorry, I didn't quite catch the amount. I understood it was about 1.2, 1.3 billion Norwegian krone, is that correct? So 100, 120 million euro?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of subject to due diligence of the receivable as such, but we have around €200 million of trade receivables in Europe. And then you have to go through those, how much of that would be eligible, how much is kind of the countries that you would like to include in this transaction. And then you end up with an amount of, say, up to €150 million. But that's kind of an estimate based on the underlying volume of receivables and not based on the due diligence of the portfolio.
In terms of your changing completely this topic, but in terms of your Australasian business, you mentioned in the past that you would sell these, you could consider selling the Australasian business if you saw an opportunity to consolidate Europe. But given your tight liquidity position, either now or at the beginning of next year, could you consider selling the Australasian business just for liquidity needs, in order to raise liquidity, even if there is no opportunity to buy European newsprint assets?
I think the underlying profitability, if we don't have any solutions to Europe, I think that would be a very close to a fire sale type of exercise. And I still think that we have better options to solve any liquidity problem than that.
Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from Ankur Agarwal of HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Just one follow-up on your non-core asset disposal. Do we expect that to happen in third quarter or the fourth quarter? You know, when the cash will flow into your...
I think it's difficult to estimate very precisely the date, sir, so I still think we need to guide on second half. It's mainly real estate transactions, so you have notary publics and other authorities in, so I don't think that we would give too precise guidance on the exact timing.
Right, and just to confirm, can you just please confirm the location of these?
These are mainly Norwegian properties.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Theodore Stamos of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Just going back to the outlook statement, are we to interpret your statement that the underlying gross operating earnings are expected to be somewhat better? Does that mean EBITDA for the second half is going to be up year on year compared to last year?
What we're looking at the full year, we reported a little bit in excess of $1.4 billion for the full year. And what we're saying in the outlook statement is that some of these items of last year were related to a reversal of an environmental provision, which was quite large, and that we had also some pension and other items which probably are not going to be repeated frequently. So for the full year, it means that we have we're guiding that we were going to be better than the underlying, which means that the second, if you do the math, you probably come to the conclusion that the second half is going to be somewhat better than last year. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Florian Chappell of Chenavari. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. A quick question regarding the revolving facility. Can you please confirm whether the covenant schedules still apply or not when the facility is not drawn?
Yes.
Yes,
they
still apply.
Apply.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
We have a follow-up question from Clarissa Tay of Barclays Capital.
Hi, could you please explain or elaborate what you see as a potential valuation for your Australian newsprint business? Thank you.
I think the valuation will be what a possible buyer would buy. Clearly, these are good assets, with well maintained and good location in competitive positions with a large market share, so they need to command a certain valuations, but I'm not going to speculate as we are neither in the sales process nor is there a very liquid market for this type of assets.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Next question comes from Patrick Kersting of Merrill Lynch.
Yes, hello again. Just a quick follow-up on what you just said about your guidance. When you're talking about underlying operating earnings being up year on year, are you talking about the 1.4 or are you talking about the, which is roughly about 1.2 before the one-off reversals? Just to back into what you're saying for the second half.
Yeah, well, what we're comparing the underlying, so we're comparing with 1.2.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
As there are no further questions in the queue, that will conclude today's question and answer session. I would now like to turn the call back to your hosts for any additional closing remarks.
We thank you all for your interest and your questions. This is probably the longest Q&A conference call I've been to, at least in this job. So we all thank you, and we welcome you back for our next quarter in early November. Thank you very much.